Hey guys! So today we're going to be talking about two of my favorite women of all time. Our first one is Audrey Hepburn, and I think my favorite quote that she's ever said is, "Nothing is impossible, the word itself spells I'm possible." Okay, so Audrey Hepburn was born May 4th, 1929. May the 4th be with you, lol. She was born in Brussels to the daughter of a baron, and her father was born in Brussels as a Brit. Both of her parents collected donations and recruited for the British Union of Fascists, although I think that that was more of her dad's influence, because after he left them, they engaged a lot with the Dutch resistance against the Nazis. So he left her family when Audrey was 6 to move to England, where he engaged more heavily with fascist groups, and he never even attempted to have like any kind of relationship with her. And because her father wished for her to be educated, Audrey was sent to a small private school in Elham, England, where she began taking ballet and singing classes. During World War II, her mother moved her to Arnhem, Netherlands, where she continued ballet under Vinya Morova. Audrey changed her name after the Germans invaded the Netherlands to Edda van Eemstra to escape the notice of the Nazis, because it was a more correct sounding name for where she was. And her whole family was affected by the occupation. Her uncle was executed for connections to resisting forces, and one of her brothers was deported to Berlin to work in a labor camp while the other went into hiding. And after the brother who worked in the labor camp died, her family moved to Velp, where Audrey began performing dances to raise funds for the Dutch resistance. There are a few accounts that provide evidence of her own participation in the Dutch resistance, like volunteering at their hospitals or hiding a paratrooper in her home. But after D-Day in France, conditions in her city grew worse. The Germans had cut off supply routes in the winter, and so she and her whole town suffered from malnutrition, acute anemia, respiratory problems, and edema. After World War II, Audrey and her family moved to Amsterdam, where she trained under some of ballet's leading teachers. However, after a while, she was told that she was too weak and small, because of her malnutrition, to ever reach prima ballerina status, so she focused on her acting instead. Her acting premiere was as an air stewardess in a travel documentary. She then appeared in many small West End shows as a supporting actress, and she was a freelance actress and became a part of the Associated British Picture Corporation. And while she was filming, Nuit Iran à Monte Carlo at the Hotel de Paris, she met Colette, a French novelist who casted her in Gigi on Broadway as the title role. She needed private coaching at first, but excelled once the show ran, even though some people thought it would never be as great as the original film. She even received a Theatre World Award for her performance. Now, Audrey's first big film was Roman Holiday with Gregory Peck. And for those of you who have never seen the movie, think the beginning of Aladdin, when Princess Jasmine leaves the palace, but Jasmine's name is Princess Anne, and Aladdin is Gregory Peck as an American journalist. The producers originally wanted Elizabeth Taylor for the role, as she was already secure in her career. But after Audrey's screen test, realized they'd be missing out on a huge opportunity to discover someone. And Gregory Peck's name was originally supposed to be in a larger font than Audrey's in the credits, but he insisted that they have an equal font because, and I quote, "she'll be a big star," which is really awesome for that time period, because, I mean, the sexism in the Hollywood movie industry was enormous. Yeah, so the film was a huge, ginormous, amazing success. She received an Academy Award for Best Actress, a BAFTA Award for Best British Actress in a Leading Role, and a Golden Globe for Best Actress for her first big movie. She signed a 7-picture deal with Paramount that allotted for 12 months of off time to allow her to participate in stage work. In a September 1953 issue of Time magazine, she was featured, and that was her premiere as a style icon. After starring in Roman Holiday, Audrey starred in Sabrina, a Cinderella story kind of movie. She won a 1954 BAFTA Award for Best Actress in a Leading Role again, and was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Actress. She was also cast in numerous Broadway productions where she was revered for her amazing performances. And while starring in Ondine, she met Mel Ferrer, who became her first husband in 1954. She also starred in the film adaptation of the Tolstoy novel War and Peace with her husband. She won a few more awards that decade and was even winning awards in years when she didn't come out with movies. Her next big movie was Breakfast at Tiffany's as Holly Golightly, one of the most iconic, well-known movies of all time. I mean, I'm obsessed with it. I bought a Tiffany's bracelet, and right now I have my eyes on these pearls that are just absolutely gorgeous. And every time I see a Tiffany's, I have to go in and look because I'm so obsessed. I went to Paris one time and I was walking down the Champs-Élysées, which is the street near the roundabout around the Arc de Triomphe, and I got to go in the Tiffany's there, and I always love to tell that story because it was so amazing. Anyway, Marilyn Monroe was originally supposed to have the role, but Audrey ended up being casted and it turned out amazing. The dress she wears at the beginning of the movie, styled by Hubert de Givenchy, I think, is one of the most iconic little black dresses of all time. Audrey starred in a few more smaller films throughout the rest of the decade, always getting the best reviews of everyone in each film. She even earned a few more BAFTA and Golden Globe nominations, and her next big movie was the movie adaptation of My Fair Lady. The casting was hugely controversial because Julie Andrews was technically available for the role, and she played the original part in the Broadway production. So a lot of people were mad that she wasn't casted in the role, but a lot of people said that if it wasn't going to be Julie Andrews, Audrey Hepburn was the best performance. And some people even said that it was the best performance of Audrey's career. So that's cool. And she even earned a few reputable awards for her performance. Audrey starred in a couple more movies throughout the rest of the 60s, but in 1967, she semi-retired in hopes to spend more time with her family. She's done a couple of projects since then, but not too many, and none with any reputable success. In the 50s, Audrey narrated a couple of children's radio shows for UNICEF, and eventually became the Goodwill Ambassador for them. In August 1988, Audrey went to Turkey on an immunization campaign. She called Turkey the loveliest example of UNICEF's capabilities. In October, Hepburn went to South America. Of her experiences in Venezuela and Ecuador, she told the U.S. Congress, "I saw tiny mountains, communities, slums, and shanty towns receive water systems for the first time by some miracle. And the miracle is UNICEF. I watched boys build their own schoolhouse with bricks and cement provided by UNICEF." She toured Central America in February 1989 and met with leaders of Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala. In April, she visited Sudan with Wolders as part of a mission called Operation Lifeline. Because of civil war, food from aid agencies had been cut off. The mission was to ferry food to southern Sudan. She went to Bangladesh. John Isaac, a UN photographer, said, "Often the kids would have flies all over them, but she would just go hug them. I had never seen that. Other people had a certain amount of hesitation, but she would just grab them. Children would just come up to hold her hand, touch her. She was like the Pied Piper." Audrey was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by George H.W. Bush and the Academy Award of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences awarded her the Jean Herschel Humanitarian Award in honor of her work with UNICEF. UNICEF also awarded her with a statue in their New York headquarters entitled The Spirit of Audrey. It depicts a 7-foot-tall Audrey holding hands with a young child with a maternal overtone. After marrying Mel Ferrer in the 50s, they were together for 14 years, but Mel was rumored to have control issues. Most people commented about their marriage that Audrey allowed Mel to think he was in control of her. After they divorced, Audrey met an Italian psychiatrist, whom she married and stayed with for 13 years, but he was unfaithful to her, so their marriage was dissolved. For the last 9 years of her life, Audrey was in a relationship with Ben Gazzara. She said that even though they were never married, they felt as though they were, and the years she spent with him were the happiest of her life. After returning to Switzerland from Somalia in 1992, Audrey experienced heavy abdominal pains and found out that she had an incredibly rare abdominal cancer. She had surgery, and as she was recovering, she was unable to fly on a commercial plane. So her longtime friend, Hubert de Givenchy, who styled her for years and years from one of her very first movies, arranged for her to fly in a private jet filled with flowers to her home in Geneva. On January 20th, 1993, Audrey passed away in her sleep. Her funeral was attended by some incredibly notable people, including Givenchy, Mel Ferrer, the Dutch royal family, and her lifelong friend Gregory Peck. Gregory read Audrey's favorite poem, Endless Love, at the funeral, and talked about starring with her in her very first movie. Throughout her life, Audrey did many notable things. Hepburn's legacy has endured long after her death. The American Film Institute named Audrey third among the greatest female stars of all time. She is one of few entertainers who have won Academy, Emmy, Grammy, and Tony Awards, an EGOT. She won a record 3 BAFTA Awards for Best British Actress in a Leading Role, and in her last year, she remained a visible presence in the film world. She received a tribute from the Film Society of London Centre in 1991 and was a frequent presenter at the Academy Awards, and she received the BAFTA Lifetime Achievement Award in 1992. Audrey represented a new, attainable feminine standard. Instead of the over-sexualized curves of Marilyn Monroe and Grace Kelly, Audrey's body was more rectangular. Many young girls looked up to her for this, and she's responsible for the popularization of black leggings in the 60s, which I'm thankful for because I wear them every day, Burberry coats, and the Italian footwear brand Tod's. And she was so closely associated with Hubert de Givenchy that he dressed her constantly in the movies, on the red carpet, and even in her day-to-day life. Next up for today's episode is the People's Princess, Princess Diana. I'd like to be a queen in people's hearts. Diana. So Diana Frances Spencer was born July 1st, 1961 in Norfolk. Fourth of 5 children to John Spencer, Viscount Althorpe, and the whole family was closely allied with the royal family for generations, as her grandmothers were ladies-in-waiting to Queen Elizabeth the Queen Mother, who is the current Queen of England's mom. She was named after Lady Diana Spencer, who is her relative and also a prospective Princess of Wales. She was informally known as Dutch because she acted like a duchess. She had 2 sisters and 1 younger brother and another older brother who passed away as an infant. It took the families years to conceive an heir, and Lady Althorpe was even sent away to find out what the problem was. She grew up in Park House on the Sandringham estate owned by Elizabeth II, current Queen of England, and she'd often play with Prince Andrew and Prince Edward. Her parents divorced in 1967, and her father won the custody battle. Her stepmother and her had a terrible, terrible relationship, and Diana later called the situation a bad overall childhood. After her father inherited the title of Earl Spencer in 1975, they moved from Park House to Althorpe, the Spencer seat in Northamptonshire. Homeschool. She was homeschooled by her governess, Gertrude Allen. Then she went to Sillafield Private School in Gayton, Norfolk. She then attended Riddlesworth Hall School near Thetford. And finally, she went to West Heath Girls School in Sevenoaks, Kent, when she was 9. And she was never very good academically. She failed her O-levels twice, but she had an amazing sense of community spirit, and she even won an award for it. When she was 16, she left West Heath, and she was very shy up until then, but she was musically gifted. She was gifted at swimming, tap, and ballet as well. She went to finishing school at Institut Alpine Vita Manette in Rougemont, Switzerland. She lived in London after finishing school with 2 friends and worked several low-paying jobs, dance instructing, as a teacher's assistant, and then her mom bought her a flat in Earl's Court for her 18th birthday. She first met Charles, Prince of Wales, the Queen's eldest son and heir apparent, when she was 16 in November of 1977. At the time, he was dating her older sister, Lady Sarah. She watched him play polo, and that's when he first took a serious interest in Diana as a potential bride. Charles courted her by inviting her on the royal yacht, Balmoral, the royal Scottish residence, to meet his family in 1980, where she was well received by everyone. And finally, he proposed in February 1981 at Windsor Castle, and they kept the engagement a secret for 2.5 weeks. Her first act of rebellion against the royal family. She lived at Clarence House, home of the Queen Mother, for a short period of time during the engagement, and then finished the engagement at Buckingham Palace, where she said her life was incredibly lonely. She was the first English woman to marry the first in line since Anne Hyde 300 years earlier, and she was the first bride ever to have already had a paying job. Her first public appearance was in 1981 at a charity ball, where she met Grace, Princess of Monaco, who was an actress originally and married the Prince of Monaco. She became Princess of Wales at 21 years old on July 29, 1981, when she married Prince Charles. They were married at St. Paul's Cathedral because it offered more seating than Westminster Abbey, another traditional wedding venue for the royal family. At the ceremony, Diana said Philip Charles instead of Charles Philip during the vows, and she left out the part in the vows saying that she would obey him, which was widely controversial, as you can probably assume. Her dress was 9,000 euros then and 34,000 euros today, and she automatically acquired the third highest female rank in the country, behind the Queen of England, Elizabeth II, and the Queen Mother, Elizabeth I. The Queen gave her visual tokens of her acceptance into the royal family shortly after they were married. The Cambridge Lover's Knot tiara, the badge, and the Royal Family Order of Queen Elizabeth II. The couple lived at Kensington Palace, and Diana's pregnancy was announced November 5th, 1981, and in January of 1982, she fell down a staircase and the royal gynecologist was summoned from London. The fetus was uninjured though, and Diana later confessed that she had thrown herself down the staircase because of feelings of inadequacy. In February 1982, there were pictures published of Diana in a bikini while pregnant, and the Queen released a statement calling it the blackest day in the history of British journalism. On June 21, 1982, she gave birth to Prince William, and she suffered postpartum depression. Diana took William with her on her first major tours of Australia and New Zealand, even though he was still a baby, after the Prime Minister of Australia suggested the idea. Prince Harry was born September 15, 1984, and Diana said that her pregnancy with him was when she and Charles were the closest. She was in charge of her own children, refusing to allow royal nannies to be in charge of them, and selecting their schools and clothing all by herself. And when her schedule permitted, she would always drop them off for school. After 5 years of marriage, the couple's age differences and incompatibility started to shine through. Charles resumed his relationship with his ex-girlfriend and current wife, Camilla Parker Bowles, and Diana began a relationship with Major James Hewitt, their family writing instructor. And it's been speculated that James Hewitt is actually Prince Harry's father, but Harry was born 2 years before the relationship. By 1987, the cracks in their marriage were being noticed and reported. Diana once confronted Camilla at Camilla's sister's birthday party, and Diana also gave secret interviews in 1991, revealing her unhappiness and her marital problems. The Queen and Prince Philip both tried to get Charles and Diana to reconcile, Philip writing several letters to Diana asking her to look at the situation with an outside perspective. And during 1992 and 1993, the media went to town, leaking private conversations between both Charles and Camilla and Diana and James. And their separation was announced in 1992. In 1993, Diana came out with a videotape saying that between 1984 and 1986, she was deeply in love with someone else. Barry Manicky was removed from his station as her bodyguard after what was believed to be inappropriate relations. So that's believed to be who she's talking about. And Charles made her constantly feel inadequate. In October 1993, Diana wrote of her belief that Charles was now in love with Tiggy Leggy Burke, her son's former nannies, and that Charles was planning to have her killed to clear the path for him to marry Tiggy. During 1993, Diana was exposed for having made 300 phone calls to Oliver Hoare, a married art dealer, but she said that some young boy had been making those calls from Kensington. She was interviewed in November of 1995 by BBC, and she discussed her marital problems with Charles and having said, "Well, there were three of us in the marriage, so it was a bit crowded," referring to Camilla's relationship with Charles. She described her bulimia, depression, and self-harm, and several psychiatrists have since diagnosed her with a borderline personality disorder. This interview convinced the Queen to send Charles and Diana letters asking them to get a divorce. Charles agreed soon after, and Diana agreed after negotiating. They agreed to the terms of the divorce in July 1996, and they finalized the divorce on August 28, 1996. Diana received a lump sum of 17 million euros, 34 million euros today, and would receive an annual 400,000 euros. There was a confidentiality agreement, and Diana lost the part in her title that says Her Royal Highness, even though the Queen wanted her to be able to keep it, and instead became Diana, Princess of Wales. And she was given the same accommodations as before, as she's the mother of an heir, and she was given the same precedence she had during the marriage. William is believed to have said, "Prince William, the current Prince William, don't worry, Mummy, I'll give it back to you when I'm king." Diana's public appearances were so charming and numerous that instead of paying attention to Prince Charles, most of the focus was always on Diana. This inspired the term Diana Mania, the people's obsession with her. She was nicknamed Diamond Princess and Jewel in the Crown. She sponsored art programs, hospital openings. She was photographed hugging children with AIDS. She focused on women's development. She met Mother Teresa while visiting her hospital, and the two women developed a personal relationship. She was vice president of the Red Cross, and she spent much of her time on humanitarian missions and projects visiting hospitals, underdeveloped countries, donating her money, and bringing attention to important social issues. Her patronages also included Landmine Survivors Network, Help the Aged, the National Hospital for Neurology and Neurosurgery, the British Lung Foundation, Eureka, the National Children's Orchestra, British Red Cross Youth, the Guinness Trust, Meningitis Trust, the Malcolm Sargent Cancer Fund for Children, the Royal School for the Blind, Welsh National Opera, the Variety Club of New Zealand, Birthright, the British Deaf Association, for which she learned sign language, All England Lawn and Tennis and Croquet Club, Anglo-European College of Chiropractic, Royal Anthropological Institute of Great Britain and Ireland, Royal National Orthopaedic Hospital, British Sports Association for the Disabled, British Youth Opera, Faculty of Dental Surgery and the Royal College of Surgeons of England, London City Ballet, London Symphony Orchestra, Preschool Playgroups Association, as well as president or patron of other charities. Her final public outing was to Northwick Park Hospital in London on July 21st. After her 1996 divorce, Diana retained the double apartment on the north side of Kensington Palace that she had shared with Charles since the first year of their marriage. The apartment remained her home until her death the following year. Diana dated the British-Pakistani heart surgeon Hasnat Khan, who was called the love of her life by many of her closest friends after her death, and she is said to have described him as Mr. Wonderful. Their relationship lasted almost 2 years with differing accounts of who ended it. However, according to Khan's testimony at the inquest into her death, it was Diana who ended their relationship in the summer of 1997. By the time of Diana's death in 1997, she had not spoken to her mother in 4 months. By contrast, her relationship with her estranged stepmother had reportedly improved. Within a month, Diana began a relationship with Dodi Fayed, the son of her summer host, Muhammad Al-Fayed. That summer, Diana had considered taking her sons on a holiday to the Hamptons on Long Island, New York, but security officials had prevented it. After deciding against a trip to Thailand, she accepted Fayed's invitation to join his family in the south of France, where his compound and large security detail would not cause concern to the Royal Protection Squad. And that's when she passed away while in a car. Yeah. And that's the life of Audrey Hepburn and Princess Diana, who is actually never held the title Princess Diana. It's Diana, Princess of Wales, but she's the people's princess. Okay. Thank you guys for listening. Hope to see you next time. Bye.